Hello, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BC Association of School Psychologists podcast. We are excited to bring you helpful ideas for your practice, supported by experts and research. We would first like to acknowledge and honor the various traditional and unceded territories where we live, work, play, and learn, including the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Coast Salish peoples, Tsuut'ina Nation, and Nuu-Chneut. Today, we are joined by Dr. Anna Stocky. She grew up in Manitoba and received a PhD in mathematics from the University of Alberta and currently works as a professor of mathematics in the Department of Math and Statistics at the University of Winnipeg. Dr. Stocky is an advocate for strong math education for Canadian children. She co-founded a math education advocacy group and is president and co-founder of the nonprofit organization Archimedes Math Schools. She hosts a podcast on education and math called Chalk and Talk. Thank you so much for joining us today and furthering the conversation around learning and how to best support our teachers and students in the school system.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here today.
Thank you. We love these conversations about education and best practice. And first off, we always like to hook our listeners with a key piece of information. Is there anything that you would like to share or highlight that is key for listeners to take away from this discussion? What one or two big ideas that school psychs can take away from your incredible work?
Okay, so I'll say two things. The first thing is that math is really important. We hear a lot about reading, but we don't hear as much about math, and math is really important too. And when children don't get a good foundation in math, it shuts them out of a lot of really important careers, and they also just don't get to experience the enjoyment of math. The other thing I'll say is people should keep in mind that math is really cumulative. So it's really difficult for students when they get behind because it can be really, really hard to get caught up. So it's so important to make sure that students get a really good foundation in math, and that has to start really early in those early years. We want students to have opportunities later on, but that starts in, K to six even.
Gotcha. Such good core pieces there. And Dr. Stocky, we were wondering about your story. We'd love to hear more about what's led you to your passion about math and education and the launch of Chalk and Talk.
Sure. And as you mentioned, professionally, I'm a mathematician. So I do research in math and I teach math at the university level. But I've always cared a lot about teaching and about math and about students of all ages having lots of opportunities to succeed in math. As you mentioned, I co-founded a nonprofit after school program, and I've been, doing outreach in math for 10 to 15 years now. So about the podcast. I learned how to podcast in 2021. I was awarded a 3M National Teaching Fellowship that year. There were 10 of us across Canada. We were all in different fields, and we had $25,000 from 3M Canada to start a project, and we made a podcast. So I figured out at that point that I could podcast. And, I wanted an opportunity to talk about evidence-informed teaching. I hear so many myths out there about math and teaching, and I wanted a place to debunk some of those myths. I used to do a lot of media interviews. Actually, I still do, I suppose. And they don't always take everything I say, or they just take bits and pieces of it. And I want a place for there to be a, where I can tell the whole story. And then the other thing that I've noticed too is that I teach at the university level. A lot of our students are becoming teachers. A lot of students I teach in math are actually becoming teachers. And I talk to them and they're not hearing about cognitive science in their classes. They don't learn about how humans learn, and they still get taught a lot of debunked theories like learning styles. So that was the idea. And I wanted to bring experts on the show and talk to them about teaching. And it's been great. I'm surprised that so many people are listening to it, but I'm really happy about that. And I've learned a lot about, a lot about teaching from the experts I've had on the show, and it's even informed my own teaching. So it's been really great.
Thank you. And certainly as one of your listeners, I have so much enjoyed the conversations and particularly that focus on math, which kind of ties into the next question. I really enjoyed the episode with Dr. Matt Burns, who I must admit I've been following for many years. So whenever he's involved in anything, I love to listen. And he discussed the science of reading, which I'm very familiar with, and the parallels sort of with the science of math, which I'm a lot less familiar with. And that's one of my goals, is to increase my own knowledge. So I guess my question is there a science of math, or is it more apt to discuss a science of learning? And what are some of the key components to this science?
Sure. So yeah, I like Matt Burns too. I thought he was awesome. I also love that episode. I'm really proud of that episode. And I was really happy to meet him and talk to him and learn about his work. So about the science of math, I'm not the one that coined that phrase. So first of all, I just want to point that out. There's a group in the US, a group of psychologists that I really respect and admire, who have founded this group called the Science of Math. So you may have heard of Amanda Vanderhaeden and Matt Burns, Robin Conning. They've all been on my show. So whether there's a science of math, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know exactly what that means. But if we talk about teaching effectiveness in math, absolutely. I think there are evidence-informed methods that we should be using to teach math. So I care a lot about teaching effectiveness. I don't care about getting attention for being innovative in the classroom. Some people do, but I think that's the wrong focus. I think we need to care about what works. That's our job as educators. It's our job to make sure that students learn. So I would say, you know, from collecting the information that I've gathered from experts that I've talked to on the show or through my own reading, I think there are some evidence-based methods that we can adopt when we're teaching. They probably apply to teaching most areas. So the main thing, I think, is to keep in mind the limitations of working memory, to try not to overload working memory. As we know, it can't hold very much, maybe 4 to 9 items at a time. And we want to work on getting information from working memory into long-term memory. In math, that can mean things like memorizing times tables, but it can also mean things like just learning techniques for solving problems. Math isn't all about memorization. It's in fact mostly not about memorization, but we need to get a lot of practice. So some of the things I think that are evidence-informed teaching methods, I'll list a few, and I think they apply to most fields, and I think they apply especially to new learners. So scaffolding, teaching things in incremental steps. Worked examples are particularly important in math. So an expert working through examples and getting students to sort of mimic that and helping students, giving them lots of feedback. I think retrieval practice is really important. And again, in math, that can mean a lot of things. It can mean just practicing techniques that you've learned again and again. And of course, deliberate practice. Practice is extremely important in math. To become an expert at anything, you really need to practice. I mean, that's sort of one of the things that I think is really sad about what's gone on in education over the past 10 to 15 years, is just the de-emphasis on practice, or sometimes people even disparage practice, which is just horrible, because it's absolutely really important for kids to get a lot of practice, for anybody to get a lot of practice when they're trying to learn math.
Yeah, absolutely. And that term drill and kill, which I really don't like at all, because that does disparage the positive aspects and one doesn't want to overdo that, but there's definite needs and positives to build that fluency that does only come with repetition.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of professionals use the term skill and drill, which is at least relative to drill and kill. It's a nicer sounding way of framing practice and the repetitive nature of it. But Dr. Stocky, you hit the nail on the head there. You know, there is such an importance to making sure your foundation is solid through a lot of these practice or deliberate practice efforts. Dr. Stocky, one thing we've learned from your podcast and others is about the importance of math fluency, automaticity, and how it plays an important role in lightening the cognitive load for When our young mathematicians encounter more complex and demanding math tasks, what other recommendations do you have for effective math instruction?
Sure. So, and you mentioned fluency, and fluency is really important. And it's really important that kids memorize their times tables. Anybody who says that it doesn't matter, we need to not listen to them. They're wrong. You need to have the times tables memorized because you need to be using that when you're solving more complex problems. Like, can you imagine trying to factor without knowing that 6 times 7 is 42? How are you going to factor a polynomial, right? So it's really important. Other things. So students, when they're first learning, they do need to be explicitly taught by a teacher. We can't expect students to develop problem-solving techniques on their own. They do need to be taught. Explicit instruction is really important, especially for novice learners. And using a bottom-up approach to teaching instead of a top-down approach. And what I mean by that, and I mentioned this because it's really important, because we see this a lot in Canadian schools or in professional development. Some of the math educators, what the methods that they promote are really top-down approaches. So they think, you know, let's start with problems, right? So we'll start with complex problems and we'll give those to the students and they'll get excited about the problem and let's just see where it goes from there. But you can't solve a problem if you don't have techniques to solve the problem. So we really do need to use a bottom-up approach. In other words, make sure that foundation is really strong and then work up to solving complex problems. And absolutely, we want students to be solving complex problems. We want to get there. That is the goal. But a bottom-up approach is going to work for that better than a top-down approach. So with word problems, you know, you want to do lots of worked examples and really breaking things down, keeping the language simple, building up to more complicated examples. The other thing you'll hear a lot about is spaced practice. That's something we don't do a lot of in math, I think, or a lot of textbooks certainly don't incorporate it. So in other words, learning a concept at one point and then, you know, practicing it until you get it. But then again, you start learning different concepts, but bringing that concept back. And the other thing that is interesting is interleaved practice. So that's different than spaced practice. So what that means is practicing problems. So first of all, block practice would mean practicing the same type of problem. Okay. So for example, let's say you're going to do, I'll keep it really simple. So let's talk about addition and subtraction. So say you learn addition and you're learning the vertical algorithm for addition. So learning that really well, practicing that, then you learn the vertical algorithm for subtraction where you borrow or regroup, practice that a lot. But then interleaving would mean after that, you sort of give different types of those problems. So you have some addition mixed up with some subtraction. And so students actually have to differentiate between the two types of problems and figure out which one to use. That's actually really important, but it's maybe not always done enough. And of course, you know, we want to start with manipulatives. There's a lot of talk about manipulatives. And what I mean by that are things like base 10 blocks. Absolutely. Start with that. But I think a lot of times we're not moving past that. Manipulatives are not computational devices by any means. They're meant to just sort of explain why things work so that you can see how things work. But you need to move past that to symbolic math. That piece is really important because that's the bridge to algebra. And algebra is the bridge to higher level math.
It's that idea of, I think, going from concrete to representational and then ultimately to abstract. For sure. That's so helpful. Thank you, Dr. Stocky.
I guess just to go off script a bit here, I'm just thinking about the concept of math talks. And I'm wondering if that would be more, you go through a few foundational skills and then at that point, maybe have the talk around the problem with some support from the teacher as to, well, try this. I'm just sort of thinking, because I know a lot of our educators talk a lot about the math talk discussions in their class and the trying to get them to be innovative and the kids coming up with those ideas. And I'm trying to wonder where they fit within that scheme or if they do.
So I would see that sort of as how I was talking about interleave practice. When you're trying to differentiate between what types of techniques you're going to use to solve a problem, that would be a good place for that. But just in general, I think, you know, explicit instruction involves a lot of talking amongst the students and the teacher. It's not a teacher standing at the board lecturing. Like, I'm a university professor, and we tend to do some lecturing, but I use explicit instruction. It's very interactive in my class. I'm always finding ways to involve the students, making sure that all my students are involved and that they're all thinking. And you do want to incorporate that when you're teaching. I'm not by any means advocating for the teacher standing at the front of the room and not interacting with students. That participation part is really, really important.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's great. And I know so many educators have really interesting ways to do that and that gaining that participation. So as school psychologists, we spend a lot of time writing and developing recommendations for individuals who have a specific struggle in math, an identified struggle in math. And so often teachers are looking for suggestions and resources that would be particularly useful for those individuals as opposed to best practice for all kids. And are there some specific tools that we know would be really helpful for individuals that have a real challenge in that math learning part aspect of their profile?
Sure. So first thing I want to mention, I'm certainly not a psychologist. I'm not at all an expert in learning disorders. I absolutely can't give advice on say dyscalculia. I'm not the right person to be giving advice on that. I can give what I think are some good recommendations for working with students that struggle based on my own experience and based on just talking to experts about it. So the first thing is, again, that scaffolding piece is really important. I don't know if you're familiar with John Mighton's program, Jump Math. I love that program. We use that in our after-school program. And so, for example, you know, he'll really break the scaffolding down for students that struggle. You know, they might, like if you're just learning, say, addition, so vertical addition, he might have a bunch of students just do the first step, then add in a second step, et cetera. So I think the biggest thing really when students struggle is to break things down. And just remember, math is really cumulative. So if someone's struggling with something, you need to figure out why it is they're struggling. It's often not because of the problem in front of them, but because of the foundational skills that are needed to get to the point where you solve that problem. So I think you have to identify where students are struggling and start there, fill in gaps, just lots of practice. And some students need a lot more practice than others, right? So some students can learn things really quickly, but then other students need more practice. And I always say, at the end of the day, say it's something like learning your times tables. Once you get to the point where you have your times tables memorized, everybody's the same. Did it matter that it took one person longer than another? No, but it does matter if they don't get to that point where they've memorized their times tables. And speaking of that, I do want to mention something that Matt Burns told me about that I didn't know about that it seems really great is incremental rehearsal. And so for that episode that I did with him, that's episode 20, I put some resources on the resource page for that episode. And two of them are little videos that he gave me on how to do incremental rehearsal for helping kids with math facts. And so the idea is you just kind of keep adding in new math facts that they don't know yet, that while still practicing the old ones. And it seems to make a lot of sense. And he's done research on that. So I would recommend taking a look at that if you're looking for ways to help with that. And also Jump Math, that is a really great program. I can't recommend it highly enough. It incorporates scaffolding, worked examples, models, all of these things that are sort of backed by cognitive science.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I think that reminder regarding that cumulative aspect of math, and I know for all subjects since the pandemic, in particular, the absences, stress, anxiety has impacted many kids and impacted their learning in all subjects. But I do think when there are those absences for whatever reason in math, then there are those big gaps, and finding where those are and trying to backfill them is a huge part of all of this. So yeah, thank you.
We would love to know some other kind of, my goodness, you've talked about so many different kinds of actionable practices already. And I've been trying to take as much notes as I can, including things like scaffolding, practice, incremental rehearsal, worked examples, models, great stuff. Are there any other things that teachers and also parents can do to support teachers with learning math for their children, their students?
I think just sort of in general, you know, if you can work with your child at home, I think it's helpful, especially things like times tables and, you know, just practicing basic arithmetic, that sort of thing, so that they get a little extra practice. Like I said, you could get Jump Math. And I think that, you know, as a society, we just need to start insisting that math is a priority. Mm-hmm. And I also think people need to start asking for evidence. There's a lot of stuff going on in schools that is really not evidence-based. In fact, it's probably the opposite. I see a lot of people making a lot of money selling programs that likely don't work. I don't think we should be tolerating that as a society. I don't think we should be funding that. And so I think that, you know, people need to start asking for evidence. I've been talking about the PISA scores this week, because that happens once every 5 years or something like that. And I get asked to talk about it. So I've talked to the media about it. And we've seen a large, like a steep decline in math scores over the last 20 years. It's not acceptable. I don't care where we sit in the international ranking. I don't think we should have that large a percentage of children performing at the lowest level in math. I think there's no excuse for it. And I think people have to start getting mad, advocating for children, and math needs to be a priority. We've seen a shift in reading, and I think we should advocate for the same shift in math.
Absolutely. Yes.
Wow. I mean, that is a great point. And I think that we are hearing a lot of discourse about reading, a lot of advocacy about it. Even I remember there's a lot of stuff that went on in Ontario and now feeds through the whole country. And it would be great to have that same thing for math, because this is yet another kind of foundational area for so many other like skills, not just in school, but in life too. Dr. Stocky, I guess another question that I had, thinking about a lot of the great practices that you had talked about, in terms of incremental rehearsal, do you have an example of what that would look like for word problems or applied problem solving?
That's a good question. I don't know about incremental rehearsal for word problems, but I will give some suggestions for teaching word problems. And I want to first say that word problems are difficult for students at any level. So they're the least favorite part of most of my math classes for my students. You know, there's some students that seem to take to them, but a lot of students really don't like word problems. And so what I would say is this. So first, I think it's really important to scaffold. So keep the language at a minimum to begin with. And so let's say you're teaching word problems. So first of all, your students already know how to add, and they already know how to subtract, and they already know how to multiply, and they already know how to divide. So give them a bunch of word problems where they're supposed to add. Keep them very simple. Now give them a bunch of word problems where they're supposed to subtract, and they're very simple. And now give some word problems where you ask them, you have the word problem, and all you ask is, what operation do I use in this word problem? And of course, you have to have modeled these things and start with that, because I think as a lot of times now you have the words, plus you've got to figure out which operation to use. It just becomes really complicated. And so start with that, and then just start, you know, bringing in more problems and scaffold up the difficulty level. The other thing I want to say about word problems, what you can do is fade. So what you do is you have a complete worked problem, okay? And then the next step is you have a worked problem, except you've removed the last step. So the student watches how you did that worked problem, and then they add in the last step. You know, so the next problem looks almost like the one you just did. And now the next problem, you remove the last two steps and then the last three steps, et cetera. And I think this sort of thing works really well, keeping in mind that we want to get to the point where you can just give them a problem and they know what to do. But don't be afraid to give them lots and lots of guidance at the beginning, because students really do need that, especially students who struggle. I mean, maybe you can give your really, really strong students word problems without a lot of guidance, but those students that struggle really need that guidance.
And so, Dr. Stocky, we would love to give you the time at this point to share about any kind of exciting projects you've got going on, any other speaking engagement.
Sure. So first, I want to say I'm heading forward with the podcast. I'm going to keep going with that. I've got 3 episodes even in the pipeline right now. 2 are with psychologists, so you'll be happy to know. I love psychologists because they provide evidence for the things I just know work, right? So if you've been teaching math for a long time, you know about these tried and true methods like scaffolding and worked examples and lots of practice, but the psychologists give us the evidence that those actually work. So I love psychologists. So I'm going to keep talking about math. I'm going to keep talking about evidence-based methods. So keep tuning in. I want to give a plug for Research Ed Toronto, May 3rd through 4th. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to be speaking there. It's in Toronto. We have Dan Willingham coming as a keynote. Daniel Ansari is going to speak. We've got Barb Oakley, Amanda Vanderhaden. It would be great to have lots of people there. We're going to be talking about evidence-based instruction, and we've got lots of people talking about math, and we've got people talking about reading as well. So those are the things I would mention.
Thank you. We had the pleasure of Dr. Ansari on our podcast and at our conference last year, and Dr. Vanderhaden came this year. So I would absolutely love to be there and would certainly encourage anyone listening to go. It sounds like a wonderful, wonderful event.
Okay, that's great. I hope to meet you there.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Stocky. We really appreciate you and your expertise. We will wrap up this episode here. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. You can connect with us on our socials at BCASP Certified on Instagram and Twitter, and at BC Association of School Psychologists on Facebook. We look forward to having you. Thank you.